Have your assigned reading material gathered and ready to go before class begins. Prioritize your note-taking. In a perfect world, you would successfully capture every single problem discussed in class, as well as every single answer and all the steps in between. Don't expect this to happen. Professors move too quickly for you to record all of their examples, so you must learn to prioritize your note-taking. First priority. Record the problem statement and answer. Even in the fastest class, there should be time to jot down the questions and final solutions. If you're in the middle of writing down steps when the professor gives the answer and moves on to the next problem, skip the rest of the steps, record the answer, and move on too. You can try to come back during a lull to fill in more of the steps, so leave space. But even if you don't, having only the problem and answer will still be useful for review later. Second priority, question the confusing. Students who do well in technical courses are those who closely follow the problems being presented and then insist on asking questions when they don't understand a specific step. Is this annoying? A little bit. Does it really improve your understanding of the techniques being presented? Absolutely. If you can't ask a question, then at least clearly mark where you got confused. Write a bunch of question marks or circle the line in your notes. This will help you later when you study. Remember, however, the more questions you get answered in class, the less legwork you will have to do later. So raise your hand, be confident, and ask away. Third priority, record the steps of the sample problem. The reality of technical courses is that the professor usually goes slow only on the first sample problem presented for a new technique. These are usually the only sample problems for which you can capture all of the steps. So pay particular attention at the beginning of the discussion and don't get discouraged if subsequent problems fly by too fast for you to record all of the intermediate steps. Final priority? Annotate the steps. If you get ahead of the professor on a given problem and you have time to kill, annotate the steps with little explanations of what they accomplish or why they're important. In the cases where you do have time for these annotations, they will prove immensely useful when you review. Step 2. Demote your assignments. Most students spend way too much time on reading assignments and problem sets, causing them to feel constantly overwhelmed by their work. This is a problem. If day-to-day assignments dominate your schedule, then there is no time left to prepare properly for the bigger exams and projects. Straight-A students hate excessive schoolwork just as much as the next student, which is why they have mastered the art of minimizing the time spent on assignments while still learning exactly what they need to know. This chapter details their strategies for powering through readings and problem sets with a minimum of stress. Follow this advice, and your assignments will be reduced from a source of energy-draining tedium into manageable tasks you can actually learn from. Work constantly. Most college students depend on day-before assignment planning, meaning they never start an assignment until the day before it's due. This might be the simplest scheduling decision, but it creates many problems. Large assignments will quickly transform from potentially interesting to tedious to painful when tackled in one monolithic, last-minute chunk of time. And if two or more assignments happen to be due on the same day, which will happen often, you will be forced into a frenzied work marathon that will produce lackluster results at best. Smart students avoid these issues by working constantly on assignments in small chunks every day. I try to sit down every Sunday night and plan out the week, explains Simon, a straight-A student from Brown. My goal is to make sure that I don't have too much work on busy days and that I do at least a little bit each day. For example, if you have a problem set due every week, complete one problem a day, 1 hour at a time. Don't spend 5 hours the night before. The same goes for reading assignments. Knock off a chapter a day, and you'll never find yourself spending a lonely night with a textbook and a six-pack of Red Bull. Bear in mind that even if you get caught up on all of your assignments for a given class, you should continue to work. For example, if it's Sunday morning and you have already finished your reading for Monday's history class and you have time to spare, break out a book and do a little of the reading for Wednesday's history class. This doesn't mean that you should study like crazy 24 hours a day. Don't stay up until 2 a.m. Sunday night trying to finish the entire week's load. But on days where you happen to be ahead of schedule and you have already put aside time to work on a certain class, take advantage of this fortuitous situation to get ahead. Once you get used to working a little bit every day, you'll be surprised by how often the situation might arise. Straight-A students use this strategy whenever the opportunity presents itself, since getting ahead on classwork frees up time to focus on big projects like paper writing or test preparation. It may seem superstitious, but easy weeks never seem to come in pairs. They're like the calm before a storm. If you find yourself with time to spare, start getting ahead on your obligations, as a hurricane of deadlines is probably lurking just over the horizon. Don't read everything. Doing all of your reading in college is a luxury most of us can't afford, especially if you're involved in extracurriculars, explains Tyler, a straight-A student from Duke. It's important to triage your assignments. What do you need to read? What do you need to skim? And what can you skip entirely? Lee from Columbia puts it as follows. Reading can get overwhelming and very few people I know do it all. That could drive a man insane. And Chris, a straight-A student from Dartmouth, states his advice simply. Don't read everything on the syllabus, of course. These students all emphasize the same important point. It's impossible to read every single thing assigned to you in every class. Sometimes you are simply given more pages to cover than you have hours in the day to complete. Therefore, it will help you to remember the following. Don't do all of your reading. Colleges should mount this slogan on big bronze plaques and hang them up in every dorm room on campus. If every college freshman knew this secret, it would probably prevent a lot of unnecessary panic attacks. The hard part, of course, is deciding what reading is important and what can be skipped. A lot of this decision-making ability comes from practice. The more college classes you take, the better you will become at identifying the exact level of importance of every assignment. There are, however, some general tips that can help you pick up this talent sooner rather than later. The techniques that follow are used by straight-A students to systematically identify which readings to spend time on and which to ignore. For example, in most college courses, there are one or two sources that show up on the reading list for almost every lecture. We will call these favored sources. They're usually a textbook or a course reader, and they provide the basic structure for the course by outlining key facts and arguments in a condensed form. Always read the assignments from favored sources. Professors usually augment these favored sources with a variety of supplemental readings that provide context or analyze certain arguments and events in more detail. These supplemental readings are often academic papers, transcripts of speeches, or chapters from books, and they are typically fascinating. But they are also typically expendable, and you should not plan on reading them all. Instead, if your time is limited during a particular week, then your strategy should be to select only the most important supplemental readings for review. Of course, college is about learning, and if you have time to get through all of the assigned reading, then you definitely should. Your professor selected all of these readings because he or she felt they were important for your complete understanding of the given topic, and the more you read, the smarter you become. But as Tyler stated earlier, reading everything assigned is a luxury that you can't always afford. So, how do you decide which supplemental readings to review, which to skim, and which to skip? Straight-A students follow this simple hierarchy. Readings that make an argument are more important than readings that describe an event or person, which are more important than readings that only provide context, i.e. speech transcripts, press clippings. Assignments at the top of this hierarchy require at least enough attention to allow you to identify the argument being made. They don't have to be read as carefully as a favored source, but you should spend enough time with them to gain a good understanding of their theses. Assignments in the middle of the hierarchy merit skimming, since they introduce facts that can clarify relevant arguments. A quick pass-through should highlight enough of these facts to be useful, and you certainly don't need to carefully review every detail. Assignments at the bottom can usually be skipped, since professors will discuss what's important about them during class. Make sure, therefore, that you bring these readings to class and take careful notes. Now, let's look at a couple of sample entries from real college syllabi to illustrate how to apply this strategy in practice. Example 1. The following entry comes from the syllabus of a history course titled The Emergence of Modern America. Class number 20. Vietnam. Reading. Meyer, Pauline et al., 2003, Inventing America. New York. Norton, 952-957, 968-971. Johnson, Lyndon B., 1992, Speech at Johns Hopkins University. Ian George Katsiafikas, editor, Vietnam Documents, American and Vietnamese Views of the War. Armonk, New York. Sharp, 200-205, Electronic Reserve. O'Brien, Tim, 1998, On the Rainy River, in The Things They Carried, New York, Random House, 39-61. Let's assume that your schedule is swamped when you come across this assignment listing. What should you do? First, note that readings from Inventing America, a textbook, show up for almost every lecture in this syllabus, so this is clearly a favored source. Following our rule, you should definitely read the pages assigned from this textbook. The two other assignments look like supplemental readings, so let's apply our importance hierarchy to figure out how much attention to devote to each. The Lyndon Johnson speech looks like a source of context, the lowest rung on our importance hierarchy. Your best bet in this case is to print out a copy and bring it with you to class. This way, if the professor makes some important points regarding Johnson's rhetoric, you can follow along and make notes on the pages. But don't bother giving it more than a quick skim in advance. The Tim O'Brien excerpt comes from a great book. It's a semi-fictionalized account of the draft during the Vietnam era, and it was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Again, if you had the time, it would definitely be worth doing a careful reading of this excerpt, since it's likely to be the most engaging and colorful. But if you happen to be overloaded at this point, you need to apply the importance hierarchy. Because this is a description of an event, it's only on the second rung. Therefore, these 22 pages require a quick 10 to 20 minute skim at best. As always, however, bring the book to class. If the professor mentions specific points relating to the book, you want to be able to follow along. It should be noted that fiction is tricky. In this case, the Tim O'Brien book was a fictional account of a historical moment, and it's assigned in a history course concerned mainly with the cultural construction of modern America. In this context, the book is providing background to the discussion, not presenting arguments, and thus it falls clearly onto the second rung of our importance hierarchy. This is not, however, always true with fiction. Novels can also be used as vehicles for powerful cultural statements or explorations into why certain events transpired. In these cases, the fiction becomes a favored source, or at the very least, it moves to the top of our supplemental hierarchy. For example, in a political science course dealing with totalitarianism in the 20th century, George Orwell's 1984 is not a source of background, nor does it simply contextualize a historical moment. It instead presents an important argument on the subject. Keep this in mind when selecting your reading. Fiction should not, by any means, be automatically discounted. And if you are in an English class that focuses only on fiction, then obviously fiction readings are your favored sources. As Christine from Harvard explains, in these instances, you defeat the entire point of the class if you read summaries or skim. You just have to do the reading. Example number 2. Here's a slightly more challenging example that comes from the syllabus of a political science course titled Comparative Health Policy. Lecture number 4. The Quest for National Health Insurance. Clinton Healthcare Plan. Reading. Enthoven, Allen. Managed Competition, An Agenda for Action, Health Affairs 7, Number 3, Summer 1988, 25-47. Ekholm, Eric, 1993. Introduction, in The President's Health Security Plan, New York, Times Books, 7-16. ISBN 0812923863. Scotchpole, Theda, The Rise and Demise of the Clinton Health Plan, in Health Affairs 14, Number 1, Spring 1995, 66-85. Hecklow, Hugh, The Clinton Health Plan, Historical Perspective, in Health Affairs 14, Number 1, Spring 1995, 86-98. Peterson, Mark A., 1998. The Politics of Healthcare Policy, Overreaching in an Age of Polarization, in Margaret Weir, Editor, The Social Divide, Washington, D.C., Brookings Institution Press, 181-229. What makes this example hard is that the course has no obvious favored sources. That is, there is no textbook or reader that shows up for every class. The key, in this situation, is to use the lecture title as a clue. The rule can be simply stated as follows. In a course with no favored sources, readings that directly address the specific topic of the lecture act as the favored sources for the day. Treat the rest as supplemental. In this example, the lecture is titled, The Quest for National Health Insurance, Clinton Healthcare Plan. Therefore, the Eric Ekholm, Hugh Hecklow, and Theda Scotchpole assignments should become your favored sources, since all three deal directly with the Clinton healthcare agenda. You should read these carefully. The two other articles are supplemental. Because they look like they contain arguments relevant to the topic of healthcare under Clinton, they fall at the top of our supplemental reading importance hierarchy, and therefore they demand enough attention to reveal their argument. A smart approach would be to read the introductions to both of these articles and then take careful notes on their theses. Confirming your decisions. You should always use the lecture itself to confirm your choice about what to read and what to skip. If the professor emphasizes the importance of a work that you dismissed, which will happen occasionally, this system isn't perfect, then make a note that you will need to go back and cover this reading in more detail before the next exam. A smart technique is to simply write these skipped readings right onto your syllabus as an assignment for a later class. Choose a day with a light reading load and treat the assignment as if it was given to you by your professor. If you don't explicitly schedule a time to cover this material, you will invariably procrastinate and then find yourself with a huge reading list to cover right before the exam. On the other hand, if you find your professor is discussing certain assignments in a lot of detail, then use this input to scale back how closely you are reading at home. As Lydia from Dartmouth explains, if you pay close attention in class and take good notes, much of the reading is often unnecessary. Take smart notes on your favored reading assignments. We've discussed which readings to ignore or skim. But the logical next question is what to do with the favored sources that you decide to read carefully. In this situation, how you take notes on the reading makes a big difference. If you write down very little, the assignment can be completed fast, but the time will be wasted because you won't have bothered to extract the big ideas in a way that makes them accessible when it comes time to study. If, on the other hand, you take detailed notes on every paragraph, your assignments will take way too long to complete. The best compromise is to use a strategy similar to the one outlined earlier for taking lecture notes. To refresh your memory, the core of this strategy is that all big ideas can be reduced to a question, evidence, and conclusion. This approach can work wonderfully for reading assignments as well. Apply it as follows. First, as with lectures, try to take notes on your computer. They will be more organized and easier to follow later on when you use them for review. In addition, typing makes it easier to record more and finish faster. Next, carefully read the beginning of the assignment. Look for the question being answered by the author. Note that this is different than a thesis statement. For example, Why did the Clinton health care plan fail is a question. The Clinton health care plan failed because of resistance from commercial health care providers is a thesis. In a reading assignment, the question can usually be found in the title or perhaps explained in the first few sentences. Record this in your notes and label it clearly. Next, look for the author's conclusion, the thesis statement. This is perhaps the most difficult part. Since academics are known to propose complicated answers to their questions, especially when writing. So it may take some serious consideration to figure out what's being suggested. Search the first few paragraphs. This is typically where the conclusion is hidden. Also check the final few paragraphs. Often a thesis is proposed at the beginning of an article but then refined slightly at the end once all of the supporting evidence has been presented. When you feel confident in your understanding of the conclusion, record it carefully in your notes. Don't worry if it takes several sentences to capture the point. Err on the side of being thorough. Now comes the easy part. Skim the entire reading. Don't take notes yet. Instead, use a pencil to make check marks next to important paragraphs that jump out at you. Because you are reading fast, you may miss some points. Don't worry. Just get the gist of the author's message and how he is supporting that message with evidence, then move on, explains Jason, a straight-A student from the University of Pennsylvania. You don't need to capture everything. Your goal is simply to mark a few solid examples that justify the conclusion as the answer to the question. Once you have skimmed through the entire reading, go back and find your check marks. For each mark, record in your notes a concise summary of the corresponding point. Label each point in your notes with the page number where you found it. This shouldn't take long. Don't worry about being formal or grammatically correct. Just dump these pieces of evidence into your notes. When you're done, your notes should contain a clearly labeled question, followed by a half dozen or so bullet-pointed pieces of evidence, then a clearly labeled conclusion. And that's it. A typical article or book chapter should fill at most a page of single-spaced notes and take no longer than 20 to 30 minutes to complete. If it takes you longer, then you're likely reading too slowly when you make your check marks. Don't be afraid to move quickly. If you understand the question and the conclusion, all you need is a sampling of the evidence that connects the two. As Matthew from Brown puts it, your goal should be to read for arguments, not facts. Don't work alone on problem sets. Perhaps the most important rule for taming the problem sets assigned in technical courses is to follow our earlier rule and work on them constantly. As Ryan, a straight-A student from Dartmouth, explains, you can work on problem sets in small pieces while you're between classes or activities. Concentrating on only one or two problems a day will help you avoid mental fatigue. Once your brain gets tired, it's easy to stall. But if you spread out your work, you will end up spending fewer hours on the assignment than if you tried to do it all at once. Even with a smart schedule, however, you will probably still get stuck occasionally. When this happens, use all the available resources to help you get unstuck. If you're allowed to collaborate with your classmates, which is often the case in technical courses, definitely take advantage of this opportunity. As Greta from Dartmouth explains, working in groups can drastically cut the time required to finish a really hard problem set. Identify one or two students who share a similar skill level as you, and then construct a regular schedule for working together on the class assignments. Set your meeting dates for 2 or 3 days before the deadlines. This gives you time to first try the problems on your own and identify the ones that give you the most trouble. Then, when you meet with your problem set group, your energy will be focused where it's needed most. However, don't meet the day before your deadline. It's important to have at least one day before handing in the assignment so you can review all of your answers and fix any small mistakes. You should also take advantage of office hours. Most technical courses hold office hours once a week, usually run by a teaching assistant, TA. These meetings are meant to clarify complicated concepts from class and to be a source of help on hard problems. Always go to office hours if you have time, and arrive knowing which homework problems pose the biggest challenge to you. Don't be afraid to ask for help. You will learn a lot during these weekly sessions, since the TAs will be able to walk you through the more difficult concepts, which will ultimately save you a lot of time and frustration. Solve problems on the go. Hard problems don't care about your schedule. If you set aside a specific hour to work on a problem set, there is no guarantee that you'll be able to find the answers during this time. This is especially true if the problems you are trying to solve require creative insight, which can't be forced. Sitting and staring at a blank sheet of paper won't always produce results. Working with a group can help you bypass these mental blocks. But often, group work is most useful when you've already thought of potential solutions for most of the problems. It would be too time-consuming to try to solve all of the problems from scratch with a group. With this in mind, you need a solid strategy for solving problems on your own without busting your schedule. A smart technique used by many talented technical students is to solve problems on the go. Here's how it works. First, set aside a little block of time to familiarize yourself with a couple of problems, and make sure you understand exactly what is being asked. You may need to review your notes to refamiliarize yourself with the relevant concepts. Next, try to solve the problem in the most obvious way possible. This, of course, probably won't work, because most difficult problems are tricky by nature. By failing in this initial approach, however, you will have at least identified what makes this problem hard. Now you are ready to try to come up with a real solution. The next step is counterintuitive. After you've primed the problem, put away your notes and move on to something else. Instead of trying to force a solution, think about the problem in between other activities. As you walk across campus, wait in line at the dining hall, or take a shower, bring up the problem in your head and start thinking through solutions. You might even want to go on a quiet hike or long car ride dedicated entirely to mulling over the question at hand. More often than not, after enough mobile consideration, you will finally stumble across a solution. Only then should you schedule more time to go back to the problem set, write it down formally, and work out the kinks. It's unclear exactly why solving problems is easier when you're on the go, but whatever the explanation, it has worked for many students. Even better, it saves a lot of time, since most of your thinking has been done in little interludes between other activities, not during big blocks of valuable free time. Write solutions right the first time. Another important time-saving tip for problem set work is to record solutions formally the first time you write them down. Many students first jot down their answers informally and then return later to reformat them into something neat enough for submission. There is no reason to include both steps. You are, for no good reason, adding a lot of extra time to the process. Instead, go slowly and deliberately the first time. Write your answer carefully and clean it up immediately until it is of submission quality. Then you can cross the assignment off your list, and it will be one less thing to worry about. Step 3. Marshal your resources. Here's a surprising fact. Most straight-A students don't think studying is a big deal. They realize that the bulk of the work required to ace an exam has already been accomplished through identifying big ideas in lectures, extracting arguments from reading assignments, and solving problem sets. By the time the test date rolls around, all that's left is a targeted review of the ideas that they have already mastered and internalized. Students who pull sleepless study marathons, on the other hand, are spending most of their time trying to learn from scratch the ideas that they could have been internalizing bit by bit as the term progressed. So, forget the conventional wisdom that more studying equals better grades. Smart students understand that if you're studying hard, then you've done something wrong. Preparing for a test should not be painful, and it should not require a lot of time. If you have been putting steps 1 and 2 into practice, taking smart notes and handling assignments effectively, studying should not be a big deal for you either. In fact, when faced with a looming quiz or exam, you have to do only 2 things. First, organize your material intelligently. Second, perform a targeted review of this material. This section will teach you how to accomplish the former. Don't worry, organizing your material properly is not a difficult task, but it is important that you do it right. Many students neglect this step, eager to dive right into the review, but by doing so, they condemn themselves to hours of unnecessary work. You don't want to be like these students. Pay attention to the advice that follows, and you will experience a significant reduction to the difficulty of your study experience. Define the challenge. Before you can conduct any meaningful studying, you must first define the scope of the exam. As Simon from Brown puts it, you need to know what kind of information the professor wants you to know. To accomplish this goal, answer the following questions. Which lectures and reading assignments or problem sets are fair game? What type of questions will there be and how many of each? As Christine from Harvard explains, it's helpful to know in advance what kind of knowledge will be asked for on the exam. IDs, dates, broad syntheses of the text's major arguments. Is the exam open note or open book? For a technical class, will formulas be provided or do they need to be memorized? How much time will be available? Does the professor expect the exam to be easy to complete during the test period or a challenge? Some professors offer answers to these questions without being prompted. Many, however, do not. If it's 2 weeks before the exam and the professor hasn't mentioned any details yet, you should ask. If you're shy, ask after class, but get the information as early as possible. It's crucial to your success. Build a study guide. Organizing non-technical course material. I have always been a big fan of making a study guide, admits Ryan from Dartmouth. This is a technique that popped up again and again in my straight-A interviews. Each student, of course, had his or her own variation on study guide creation, but they all followed more or less this same general approach. For a non-technical course, once you find out which lectures and reading assignments are fair game for the exam, print out the corresponding notes that you've typed up or gather the pages you've written on. Don't be afraid to deconstruct your notebook. Cluster these pages into piles separated by general topic. Clearly label each of these piles with its topic and fasten them together with a paperclip so you can easily transport them without mixing up the pages. This final step is important since you will be moving to and from your various isolated study spaces once you begin your review. For simplicity, we will refer to these topic-themed piles as chapters. Your final study guide, therefore, should contain a chapter consisting of reading and lecture notes for each general topic that might be covered on the exam. Construct a mega problem set. Organizing technical course material. For a technical course, many students follow a variant of the study guide approach that focuses on sample problems. It works as follows. Your problem set assignments are the key to your review process. Start a pile for each problem set that covers material that might appear on the exam. Next, you'll need to supplement each problem set with sample problems from your lecture notes. For each lecture relevant to the upcoming exam, do the following. 1. Match the lecture to the problem set that covers the same material. 2. Copy sample problems from these lecture notes onto a blank sheet of paper. You don't have to copy the steps or the answers, just the questions. 3. Label the blank sheet of paper with the date of the lecture. This will help you later figure out where these problems came from, and more important, where their answers can be found. 4. Fasten this sheet with a paperclip to the problem set you matched it to in step 1. In other words, this process transforms your problem sets into mega problem sets by adding extra problems drawn from your lecture notes. Pretty simple. Finally, you must augment your mega problem sets with technical explanation questions. What are these? For every major topic covered in a particular mega problem set, jot down a question that asks you to explain the basics of the topic. For example, as Greta from Dartmouth recounts, in an economics course, I would make study sheets and then add a general question such as, what happens when a government increases spending and lowers interest rates? Or for a chemistry class, You might have a problem set containing many questions that require you to draw the molecular structure of specific chemical compounds. In this case, you could add a technical explanation question along the lines of, explain the general procedure for drawing a molecular structure, why this is useful, and what special cases must be kept in mind. It's important that you add these technical explanation questions in addition to your regular sample problems, since they will reveal whether or not you understand the underlying concepts or if you've just memorized the steps for some particular problems. One last note. If your professor makes a practice exam available, then print out a copy of it and store it with your mega problem sets. For technical courses, sample exams are a great review tool, and you will definitely want to have them handy when it comes time to study. Prepare memorization aids. Both technical and non-technical courses sometimes require you to do some memorization. Formulas, chemical equations, artwork, dates, or chronologies. And the most efficient way to memorize this information is by using flashcards. Almost every straight-A student interviewed for this book used flashcards to help with rote memorization. Fortunately, this technique is easy. Buy a stack of index cards, put the prompt on one side and the answer on the other. Constructing these flashcards, however, can take longer than you might imagine, so start early. If possible, start writing up your cards at least a week before the first day you plan to actually study. The activity is mindless. You can write flashcards while watching TV, so it shouldn't be too hard to get them done in advance, bit by bit. Schedule your organization wisely. Don't try to organize and study in the same day. This is a crucial tactic used by many straight-A students. When you review, you want your brain at full power. If you organize your materials the same day that you review them, your brain will be too tired to accomplish both effectively. So, keep these two tasks separate, and you'll end up working more effectively, which reduces the total time spent and produces better results. Step 4. Conquer the material. Now it's time to get down to business. For weeks, you've taken smart notes and extracted insights from your assignments. You've identified the scope of the exam and organized all the relevant information into study guides or mega problem sets. Your flashcards are stacked and ready to go. You're rested. Your time has come. There is nothing left to do but, dare we say it, study. This is the step students most commonly identify with exam preparation. It's also the step that most students misguidedly spend the majority of their time on. You're not most students, at least not anymore. All of the work you put in up to this point was meant to make this one step as small and painless and insignificant as possible. So don't worry. There are no all-nighters in your future. What follows are powerful techniques for taking your imposing piles of study material and imprinting the key ideas on your mind as efficiently as possible. These techniques are quick, but ruthlessly effective. Use them with confidence. They get the job done, and they get it done fast. Trust the quiz and recall method. Whether it's philosophy or calculus, the most effective way to imprint a concept is to first review it, and then try to explain it unaided in your own words. If you can close your eyes and articulate an argument from scratch, or stare at a blank sheet of paper and reproduce a solution without a mistake, then you have fully imprinted that concept. It's not going anywhere. The same is not true if you merely read over something. Passively reviewing a concept is not the same as actively producing it. Most students make the mistake of relying only on passive review. They read and reread their notes and assignments and assume that the more they read, the more they will remember. But as Ryan from Dartmouth warns, simply reading it over doesn't work. You have to make the extra effort to get it into your head. Using the quiz and recall method for non-technical courses. To apply the quiz and recall method to non-technical course material, you first need to construct a practice quiz for each chapter in your study guide. Fortunately, the questions for these quizzes already exist since, if you followed the advice of steps 1 and 2, all of your notes should be in a question evidence conclusion format. Therefore, the quiz for any given chapter can simply contain all of the questions from the notes you took for that chapter. You can be flexible here. If your notes contain some really broad questions, for example, an entire lecture that deals with only one idea, break them up into several smaller questions that, together, cover all of the relevant points. On the other hand, if your notes have a bunch of really small questions, you can combine some into larger questions to save space and time. This process is not an exact science. Your goal is simply to produce practice quizzes that cover all the material contained in each corresponding chapter. If you can answer all the questions, then you understand all the big ideas. Once you've built your practice quizzes, go through them one by one. For each question, try to articulate the matching conclusion and provide some highlights from the supporting evidence. You don't have to reproduce the material in your notes word for word, but you do need a reasonable summary of the big idea and its support. Here's the important part. Don't do this only in your head. If you're in a private location, say your answers out loud using complete sentences. As Lydia from Dartmouth explains, I find that walking around and saying things out loud commits them to memory in a spectacular way. If it helps, act as if you're giving a lecture on the subject. Follow Lydia's suggestion and pace around while providing your answer. Get your blood pumping. Put some music on in the background. Make it an event. Your study guide was designed to be portable, so it shouldn't be too difficult to find a place to be alone. For this crucial step, think beyond the library. I used to do this type of review while walking a nature trail on campus. One of the students I interviewed reviews on the treadmill. Be creative. Studying doesn't have to involve long hours sitting at a desk. However, if you are forced to review with other people around and you need to be quiet, then you can write out your answers. The physical act of writing and the manipulation of the material in my mind was usually enough to keep things straight, explains Melanie, a straight-A Dartmouth student. You don't have to format these responses perfectly with correct spelling and grammar, but they must contain all of the pertinent information. No shortcuts. If you don't say or write it, don't consider it fully reviewed. Next, put little check marks on your quizzes next to any questions that you had trouble answering. Glance through your study guide to remind yourself of the right answers to these questions. Take a quick break. Now, repeat the first step. Except this time, you need to answer only the questions that you marked during your first run-through. Put a new check mark next to the questions that you still have trouble with. Once again, look through your notes to get the right answers, and then take a quick break. Then go back to the practice quiz and try to answer the questions that you marked on your second run-through. You get the idea. Repeat this pattern until you complete a run-through without adding any new check marks. At this point, you're done. The power of this approach is its efficiency. You spend the least amount of time with the questions that you understand the best, and you spend the most amount of time with the questions that cause you the most trouble. You also have a definite end point. There is no need to wonder how much longer you should continue reviewing. Once you finish a round without any more check marks, you're finished, and not a minute is wasted. Many students are uneasy with how little time is required by this process. They feel like they should continue to review their quizzes again and again up until the moment of the exam. This is unnecessary. The quiz and recall method is powerful because it does not depend on multiple reviews of the same information. Once you've articulated an answer out loud in complete sentences, or recorded it clearly with pencil and paper, it will stick in your mind. As Chris from Dartmouth explains, the quiz and recall method takes much less time than people think it does. One day to make the quizzes for the term, and only a few hours to review. Using the quiz and recall method for technical courses. The quiz and recall method is easily applied to technical courses. You already constructed your mega problem sets. Now you simply need to solve them. Start with the technical explanation questions. Thinking about the general concepts first will make it easier to solve the specific sample problems that follow. As with non-technical courses, try to provide an articulate answer for each problem and, if possible, give your explanation out loud as if lecturing to a class. Otherwise, write out your answers clearly. Don't skip any important details. Once you're done with the technical explanation questions, move on to the sample problems. Try to answer each. Again, Don't do this in your head. I don't just read the material, explains Warasim, a straight-A student from Brown. I write the important equations and concepts out by hand. Your solutions don't need to be as detailed as if this was a real assignment, but they should clearly demonstrate that you know what you're doing. If you can't explain exactly how you got from the question to the answer, then you don't yet understand this problem. Be honest with yourself. If you're just regurgitating memorized solutions, you aren't prepared to handle new questions on a test. As before, checkmark the questions that give you trouble. Review the solutions for these questions. Take a break, then repeat the process, except this time, try to answer only the questions you marked on the previous pass. Follow this method until you finish a round with no checked problems. When this happens, you're done. Doris from Harvard explains a final caveat for technical course preparation. If professors make exams from past years available, these are a terrific resource. In this case, wait until after you finish your quiz and recall, and then try to complete the exam under timed test-taking conditions. Consider this a final check that you understand all of the needed concepts. If you have trouble with a few questions on this practice exam, review them carefully. If you have trouble with a lot of questions on this practice exam, then something went wrong with your previous review, and you need to go back through the material. Work through another round of question answering, and this time, really make sure you understand each of the steps. If you still have trouble, then it's time to seek out help from a classmate or a TA. Memorize over time. If you have material that must be truly memorized, dates, artists, chronologies, formulas, there are, unfortunately, no real shortcuts. You just have to keep working with your flashcards until you have no trouble providing the right answer, even after you shuffle the cards into a random order. Memorization is particularly dependent on your available mental energy. It doesn't work if you try to commit items to memory for 8 hours straight, but it does work if you memorize only an hour at a time, and only 1 or 2 hours a day. So, separate the task of memorizing from your other review. Spread the work out over many days, and never dedicate too much time to anyone sitting with your flashcards. Melanie from Dartmouth recalls how some of her peers would review their flashcards at any opportunity, eating dinner, waiting in line at an email terminal. Which is the most effective way to get through this tedious task and commit the necessary items to memory. Step 5. Invest in academic disaster insurance. Most college students have an exam horror story to tell. These stories always seem to start the same way. The first question on the test is easily solved, you still have plenty of time, and everything feels good. Then you see it. A question that you have no idea how to answer. Leaving it blank will torpedo your grade, and as you sit and stare, the time to solve the other questions quietly slips away. The good feeling is gone, and in its place, panic creeps in. You've just experienced an academic disaster. Conventional wisdom says that academic disasters are unavoidable. No one can study every single topic, and therefore you are going to get nailed occasionally. But here's the lesson of step 5. Don't believe this. Straight-A students have a knack for avoiding rogue questions. It's as if they invest in some sort of academic disaster insurance. Protection against the unexpected return of those obscure topics that slip by when you doze off for a moment in class. In reality, this insurance policy is nothing more than a simple strategy. Eliminate your question marks. This technique can be employed throughout the term, and over time, significantly reduce the chance that you will be baffled by an unexpected exam question. Eliminate your question marks. In step 1, we covered smart techniques for taking notes in class. If you remember, this strategy suggests that you put a question mark in your notes for any topic that flies by without you really understanding the conclusion. This will occur occasionally in both technical and non-technical courses. Sometimes as the result of your attention wandering, and sometimes as the result of the professor heading off on a tangent and not offering a satisfactory explanation. These question marks are dangerous. As Christine from Harvard puts it, by skipping a point made in a lecture, you're gambling with the possibility of being truly in the dark on the exam. The scenario is simple. During the semester, a few topics slip past your attention in class, so you end up with a handful of question marks in your notes. When it comes time to study, you have more than enough big ideas that you do understand and that you need to review, so the occasional question marked topic gets ignored. You enter the exam feeling prepared, and then, as luck would have it, you find yourself face to face with a big essay question covering one of those bypassed concepts. Whoops. To prevent this from happening, you need to eliminate these question marks. The key is to start this process well before the exam. If you leave all of these question marks unanswered until you start studying, you will end up spending many extra hours looking up the required explanations. Learning a large quantity of material from scratch during the review process is a mistake made by average students, and you should avoid this. Instead, try to knock off question marks as soon as they arrive. By the time you begin studying, you should, as Robert, a straight-A student from Brown, explains, have at least a vague understanding of every topic that will be covered on the exam. The following four tactics, if used regularly, will help you achieve this goal. They provide a solid defense against unclear ideas and will allow you to start the study process with an explanation in mind for all relevant topics. Ask questions during class. When in doubt, I just ask questions in class for more clarification, explains Warisom from Brown. If a topic slides by you, raise your hand and ask for a clarification. The more question marks you eliminate on the spot, the less work you will have to do later. Develop the habit of talking to your professor briefly after class. Talk to the professor after class or send him an email asking for clarification about questions that arose during his lecture, suggests Jason from Penn. There is nothing unusual about this. Most professors will stick around for 5 or 10 minutes after the bell to answer final questions. Take advantage of this time. When the class ends, head over to the professor and see how many of the question marks of the day you can get eliminated. You should then immediately correct your notes before you forget the explanations. Will this turn you into a brown noser? No. The brown nosers are those who come up to the professor only to tell him what parts of the lecture they found interesting or to offer up some of their own brilliant thoughts on the topic. You, on the other hand, have a list of focused questions that you want answered, which makes you seem smart, not sniveling. Ask classmates. If you're still unclear, James, a straight-A student from Dartmouth, recommends that you talk with other people about the topic. Send an email or corner them in the hall soon after the lecture. If they understand the topic, it will take them only a few minutes to explain it to you while it's still fresh in their minds. Come prepared to exam review sessions, if offered. Many classes offer a formal review session the week before the exam. Go to these. Before you arrive, jot down all of the topics from your notes that you are still unsure about. Then, during the session, try to get all of them answered. Don't be worried about having a lot to discuss. More often than not, review sessions suffer from too few student questions, so your professor or TA will appreciate your preparation. The goal of these defensive tactics is to eliminate your question marks without adding any study time. If, however, despite your best attempts, some of these unclear topics persist until your review, your last-ditch defense is to skim. You probably won't have time at this point to look up detailed explanations from scratch for every leftover question mark, and even if you did, the effort would be way too time-consuming. Remember, straight-A students avoid long study hours. So skim over just enough material to have something to say for each of these points. On the off chance that one of these lingering question marks topics comes up on the exam, at least you won't leave a blank page. But this situation can still be dangerous, so follow the first four strategies to reduce the topics you don't understand as much as possible before your studying begins. Step 6. Provide A+ answers. The final step of the straight-A process is actually taking the test. Many students incorrectly believe that preparation is the only thing that counts. To them, taking a test is a simple matter of showing off what they know. This type of thinking is risky. Why? Even the most prepared student can bomb an exam due to poor test-taking skills. The potential pitfalls during an exam are numerous, but the most common are 1, running out of time, and 2, providing answers that, although detailed, don't fully answer all parts of the question being asked. In fact, these two dangers work together in a devilish counterbalance, making them particularly hard to conquer. That is, if you try to avoid spending too much time on questions, then you are likely to provide incomplete answers. On the other hand, if you try to provide detailed answers, then you are likely to run out of time. The situation sounds dire, but it's not. With the right strategy, you can eliminate these fears and ensure that your grade properly reflects your level of preparation. Straight-A students recognize this point, and when asked about test-taking, they provided detailed responses proving that for them, this final step is no mere afterthought. They treat the test-taking process with great respect, and this attention is reflected in their consistently high grades. Their advice has been called into 5 key strategies. Together, they provide a comprehensive test-taking system, finely tuned through experience to maximize performance. Follow these rules on every exam, and you'll be able to transform yourself into a test-taking machine. Cool, confident, and ruthlessly efficient as you move from question to question, providing the best possible answers. Strategy number 1. Review first, answer questions later. I always read through the entire exam first, explains Robert from Brown. This is good advice. For any exam, your first step should always be to review all of the questions. If it's an essay exam or a technical exam with a relatively small number of questions, then read each prompt carefully. If the exam is multiple choice or contains many questions, skim through quickly and get a feel for which topics are covered. This review familiarizes you with the length and relative difficulty of what lies ahead. It also primes your brain for the topics you'll need to address. Always scan all the questions, explains Anna from Dartmouth. This allows your mind to think about all of them, even while you are focusing on one in particular. In other words, while you toil away on an early question, another part of your brain, working in the background, will begin to retrieve information relating to the topics still to come. This actually happens, and it helps you answer the later questions more quickly. Finally, and perhaps most significantly, this first step also helps you relax. Stress proliferates in a classroom right before an exam is distributed. It's a make-or-break situation. Months of effort have led up to this single moment, and you have only a scant hour or two to prove what you know and secure your final grade. You begin to question yourself. Did you study everything you needed to? Have you forgotten important ideas? What if the exam focuses on a subject you know nothing about? If you left it blank, what would happen then? Just thinking about this situation is enough to make most undergrads sweat. However, by taking the first few minutes to carefully review the exam, you break this mounting tension. It gives you something productive to do that doesn't involve actually answering questions. Once you complete this task and build a better idea of what to expect, the exam becomes less menacing. You've seen the questions and, hopefully, none seem impossible. You begin to say to yourself, okay, maybe this isn't all that bad. Your confidence rises, your heart rate lowers, and your stress begins to dissipate. Now you can turn your full attention to providing standout responses. Strategy number 2. Build a time budget. At any given point during an exam, you should know the maximum number of minutes you have to spend on the current question before moving on to the next. As Doris from Harvard puts it, I lay down very strict time limits for myself on each question. This strategy goes a long way toward avoiding time trouble. It keeps your attention focused and prevents you from spending too much time on any particular question. The key to maintaining this keen awareness is to build a time budget. First, take the time allotted for the exam and subtract 10 minutes. Next, divide this amount by the number of questions. The result is how long you have to spend on each prompt. What should you do with this information? For an exam with a small number of questions, mark right on the test pages